Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives. And this is our mini episode.
We're going to try to make it mini.
Yeah, listen, we're going to speed through it. We're not trying to be here for a full hour like we have been lately.
Right.
Because I'm going to get reprimanded by my boyfriend for making our episodes too long.
Yeah, Anthony, what the fuck?
Jesus, I feel like I'm under so much pressure now.
This is like a common theme that I just tell Anthony what the fuck.
I know.
Like every mini episode, I'm like, Anthony.
And so often he's like on the other side of that door, so yeah. It's like we could tell him to his face, but like, Right. Let's let it be a surprise.
But then he's like, get back in the closet. And we're like, okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, so let's jump right in, shall we?
What do you want? Oh, God, I'm still sick, guys, so I'm sorry if I, like, spontaneously do that horrible cough.
Should we start with big news or less big news?
We'll start with big and get, I think, like, a common thing we should do is, like, start with big, make our way to lighthearted.
Right? Okay, sure. Okay, so the biggest news that I think has happened in the last week, for whatever reason, I feel like big news always breaks on like Wednesdays and Thursdays, which means that we wait a whole week before we talk about it. But I think it was last Wednesday when Rudy Giuliani went on the Sean Hannity show and basically just fucked shit up. Did you hear about that?
I don't know anything about this.
Okay, so Rudy Giuliani is now part of Trump's...
Who is this?
Rudy Giuliani? He was the mayor of New York when 9/11 happened.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like a crazy,
batshit
old man now.
Yes.
And he, you know, was saying just crazy things during the campaign about Hillary, like, just being insane.
Yes.
And I think the only reason, and he was pointed to some position in Trump's administration.
Yes.
And now, because he was a prosecutor, he is now on Trump's legal team as of, like, 2 weeks ago.
Great.
Well, anyway, he went on the Sean Hannity show and just like, okay, we're going to preface this and I'm going to try and unpack this in a way that makes sense because my brain does not process these things well. So I had to like read a bunch of stories and listen to a bunch of stuff to try and understand what happened here.
Yeah, that's why for me, it's like I start reading these things and then it's like my brain can't.
Yeah, your head gets, your eyes get heavy.
Yeah,
listen,
can't do it.
Listen, listeners, I am doing this for you, like, because I don't try to process this stuff like this, but I feel like I need to bring it to your attention.
I appreciate you doing it so I don't have to.
So Trump is on record denying knowing anything about the, like, $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels, right?
Yeah.
He's basically like, I don't know anything, talk to Michael Cohen, you know, I don't know anything about Stormy Daniels being paid off, et cetera,
I'm reading about this right now, too, so I see where you're going with this.
And Michael Cohen said the same thing, basically. He was like, it has nothing to do with the campaign. It was a personal favor that I did for Mr. Trump because I love him so much and he's my bro and he just didn't want Melania to find out. So that's why I paid him out of my personal money. I remortgaged my home or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Rudy Giuliani gets on Sean Hannity just like bold as day and is like, so yeah, Trump knew about, like he was like, he didn't do anything illegal. He didn't do anything illegal. We funneled it through a bank or whatever, and then the president paid it back. And it's like, okay, well, you just contradicted everything that the president just said about, like, not knowing anything about Stormy Daniels and that money being paid off. And then you could tell, like, it was so funny to, like, watch it because Sean Hannity is just like, oh. Like, because, you know, he totally didn't expect it to go this way.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, no. And, like, he realizes that
what's my next step?
They're kind of, like, caught in a lie. So I think they were trying to give Rudy Giuliani, like, a chance to redeem himself the next day, and they put him on Fox and Friends. And instead of redeeming himself, he kind of just dug his hole a little bit deeper. So the reasons why we should care about this, because it's very confusing, is basically the campaign finance law violation is that this payout can be seen as a contribution to the campaign because the hush money that was given to Stormy Daniels can be seen as something to benefit Trump's campaign slash the outcome of the election. So far they've been kind of explaining it away as like, this was Michael Cohen's money, Trump had nothing to do with it, didn't know anything about it, and Giuliani is saying that Trump paid Cohen back, which can be seen as a donation to the campaign. So then Giuliani goes on Fox and Friends, like, presumably to fix the situation, and instead he digs the hole even deeper by being like, he said this exactly. However, imagine if that had come out on October 15th, 2016, in the middle of the last debate with Hillary Clinton. Cohen didn't even ask. Cohen made it go away. He did his job. So he admitted that it was tied to the connection. Like, he made that tie when that's the last thing you wanted to do. This is Trump's lawyer.
Yeah.
And so far, they had, like, you know, plausible deniability about it being connected to the campaign. And then in comes Giuliani, who's just like, this situation where Stormy Daniels came in and was like, I'm going to tell everybody about our affair, came up during the campaign. And they were like, we need to make this go away as soon as possible because it's going to be bad for his optics during the campaign, essentially. So now there are four possible felonies that Trump could be facing because of Rudy Giuliani's admission. And this is from a Democratic lawmaker named Ted Lieu posted this. And he said, here are the felonies that Trump could be possibly receive. One, the $130,000 payment to Stormy was in-kind coordinated contribution above limits. Two, Cohen was a straw donor used to cover up the true source of the contribution. Three, false statements on financial disclosures. And four, false statements on banking forms. And so Trump basically came out and was like, Rudy's confused. He's like a good guy, but he's like super confused. And it's just interesting to me that like none of these people can keep their lies straight. Like that's where we're at. It's just like, nobody can keep their lies straight. All of them are, like, they basically seem to me to be, like, bad mafia guys.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
They have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, like, they're bad at organized crime. Like, it's not working. So, at the end of the day, does this really mean anything? Probably not. I mean, like, there's been so much shit happening with this administration, and they've been under so many, like...
Yeah, that have kind of gone away after a while.
Right, like, issues with the law. But it's just yet another thing to highlight how bonkers this administration is and how much he's lying to you, like, on the regular. Like, lying to you so much that his own people can't keep up with his lies. Like, that's where we're at on this. So I hope that made sense to you guys. I'm gonna drink some wine now.
Also, you have another eyelash on your cheek. This happened last
episode. They've been falling out, I swear.
Make a wish. Okay, sorry guys, I had to do it.
Okay, so I have another kind of semi-serious one.
How many, like, semi-serious ones do you have?
It's just these two because they're biggies. Okay, so the New York Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, resigns amid abuse allegations. So Eric Schneiderman is the New York's Attorney General, and he has been a liberal Democratic champion of women's rights. He was an outspoken figure of the Me Too movement, you know, with everything that went on with Harvey Weinstein. And
how sad is that?
Yeah. Oh, it's really upsetting. It's really, really upsetting.
That's how I felt when Al Franken, like, his allegations came out. I was like, oh.
Yeah, he is a Democrat. And it says here, this is from the New York Times article. As New York State's highest-ranking law enforcement officer, Schneiderman, who is 63, has used his authority to take legal action against the disgraced film mogul Harvey Weinstein and to demand greater compensation for victims of Weinstein's alleged sexual crimes. Last month, Schneiderman issued a congratulatory tweet to The Times, praising the brave women and men who spoke up about the sexual harassment they had endured at the hands of powerful men. Without these women, he noted, there would not be the critical national reckoning now underway. Well, now he has four women who have come forward and said that he was physically violent with them.
Damn.
So not sexual violence, but two women.
Physically violent.
Yeah, and two women actually came out and, like, revealed their names to the Times.
Yeah. Because
they were like, we're going to come out and, like, let you know that this is what happened to us. And both of them say that he slapped them, like, hard across the face, like, left marks, like, threatened them, like, if they were to go and say anything. And then two more women also came out and said, yeah, he did this stuff to us, too. And he came out and was just like, this has nothing to do with anything. These were consensual, basically role-playing sexual encounters.
No.
Yeah, where, like, he hits them, but it's, like, kinky, sexy fun, you know what I mean? And they're like, no, 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 no. Because both of them, neither one of these women who have come forward to the Times, neither one of them pressed charges at the time, but both of them sought medical help for their injuries. So their injuries were pretty substantial.
Yeah.
So,
and then there's proof as well. They can go back to their medical history.
Yeah. And so the Times released this, like, basically kind of, like, expose on this guy who has built a career on the back of being a champion for women's rights and being kind of a champion for the Me Too movement and challenging Harvey Weinstein.
What an evil person.
Yeah, it's just so duplicitous. Like, he's just so two-faced.
Ugh.
And then 3 hours after the publication of this story, Schneiderman resigned.
Of course.
So, and he says, while these allegations are unrelated to my professional conduct or the operations of the office, they will effectively prevent me from leading the office's work at this critical time. I therefore resign my office effective at the close of business on May 8th, 2018.
Damn.
So, he's out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that just goes to show you how deeply ingrained it is and how these people... Can you imagine if you were one of his victims and watching him kind of, like, use the Me Too movement to propel his star?
His career, yeah.
Yeah, is so gross.
That's disgusting.
And I can only imagine that that's probably why they came forward and did what they did, because it's just like, that's... Like, it's the same thing with when we were talking about James Franco.
Yeah.
Where it's just, like, seeing him with his Time's Up pin, they were like, excuse me, did you forget about all this shit that he did?
Yeah.
Can we address that real quick?
I mean, people in Hollywood like to forget about people who have done something substantial for the industry. What's his name? He was... Who's the guy who got fired from Transparent, but he's also in Arrested Development?
Jeffrey Tambor.
Yeah, he's still going to be in the new season of Arrested Development, which I feel like is kind of shady.
Yeah, I haven't looked into his allegations. I need to do that.
I remember when they came out, but I don't remember the details.
There's just too many. Like, that's the thing. There's too many people, too many allegations to keep up with. But here's a good thing that we can mention that was in the news. I didn't do a lot of reading about it, but... both Bill Cosby and Roman Polanski have been taken out of the Academy of Motion Pictures.
High five, Keegan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did it.
We did it. I know. I texted Keegan when I saw that, and she was like, about damn time. And I was like, I agree.
Yeah. It's just a weird thing for them to take Roman Polanski off of it now, because I'm like, this wasn't a mystery to you guys for all of this time that he...
But now they're being called out.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
but that's also
better
kind of...
late than never, but it's still kind of like, okay, now you finally are deciding to do something right.
Yeah, I agree it's better late than never, but it kind of sucks when you knew all this time that he raped a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
Drugged and raped a 13-year-old all this time, and you were kind of okay to overlook it until society was like, uh-uh. We're not going to do that anymore.
But that's how they are with
everything. I know.
I mean, like, Casey Affleck just won the Oscar last year.
Yeah, and it wasn't until this year that they were like, hey, you can't go to the Oscars. Yeah. Don't go. Like, we're not going to let you present that award.
Exactly. So it's one of those things that, like, people have just overlooked forever, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many celebrities out there where people, like, Johnny Depp, for me, I will not support any movies that he's in anymore.
Yeah.
He's in the new Fantastic Beasts, and it just made me so sad.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a tough pill to swallow for me, too. And it's difficult because, like we've said in the past, it's hard to know where you want to draw your line.
Yeah.
For me, like, obviously my line, I don't, even though I love them, I love Roman Polanski's movies. I think he's an incredible director. I feel the same way about some Woody Allen movies. I really enjoy them, but I won't watch them. Because you know what? There's a million other movies out there that I can watch and enjoy that don't have these men in them.
Yeah.
Who did really shitty things and aren't, like, up until right now, haven't been called, you know, to the carpet on it.
Yeah.
So it's just really fucking hard. Because it's just like, if you cut out everyone who's problematic, you'll never watch anything ever again.
It's true. It's true. You know? Like, I did go see Isle of Dogs. And I did know that there was, like, shady shit with Wes Anderson. I don't even know what's up with that. Yeah, I don't either. And I don't know. It's hard. I really wanted to see the movie, and I'm glad I did because it was really good. But, I know he's problematic.
It's hard. It's just, like, you can't eliminate everything. You can't survive in this world if you do that.
Yeah.
But there's you have to make lines for yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know?
I feel like there's certain people that... feel like it almost hits home for me because they maybe remind me of someone that I know or things like that, where it's like certain people are especially hard for me. I don't know why.
Well, I think that's everyone. Like, for me, I think it's if I feel like you're not receiving any comeuppance or anything. That's what gets me more than anything. Like, that's why I can't do Chris Brown, because I'm just like, you know what, society?
Yeah, fuck Chris Brown.
Fuck you guys for allowing this guy to just come back and accept him. Like, that's messed up.
Yes.
And that's why I felt the same way about Roman Polanski. I'm like, uh-uh. Like, this is bullshit that we're not gonna, like, address this. Like,
Chris Brown will forever.
He's on the shit list forever.
Never gonna
forgive
off.
Him. Never, ever.
I think I've mentioned on this podcast or how he was on like an episode of Black-ish, and I was like, done, bye.
Yeah, no, it's not okay. I don't know why we collectively as a society are just gonna be like, it's fine and move on. When people haven't, I'm not like against forgiveness. If you've atoned for your sins, really genuinely come forward and apologized and changed as a person and, like, made strides to try and make it better. Because I get it. Like, you know, sometimes people change and, like, I don't know. But Chris Brown has never, ever done that.
No.
He's not shown any remorse. He's continued to be a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, he had, like, a documentary and, like, the cover
was,
like,
off.
Him and his baby girl. I'm like, oh, shut up.
Fuck off. I don't care. And I had this conversation with someone where I was, like, talking about him, and she was like, yeah, but, like, he is really cute with his daughter. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. Like, I hope he's not a piece of shit father. Like, I hope so for her sake.
Right.
But if you think that's just going to make me, because he's nice to his offspring, if you think that's going to make me, like, think that he's a decent
his
human
offspring.
Being.
I love
you. No.
Okay, so let's segue into another piece of shit human being.
Good, good.
DJ Khaled.
DJ Khaled! We the best! Oh, no.
Man, just perpetuating that we just don't get any love. In a recent interview that was apparently from 2015, he said it was a woman's job to praise the man, the king. When asked, the DJ said that he would never perform oral sex on his wife.
His poor wife.
Right? But that it wouldn't be okay if she decided she didn't want to do the same. So basically, he's like, I'm never going to go down on her. But if she ever said, I'm not going to go down on you, he'd be like, nuh-uh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Such bullshit.
And you know what I hear when a man says that? I hear that you've never made your wife come. Like, that's what you're telling me.
Exactly. It's like, well, then your wife is not satisfied in bed. That poor, poor person.
I mean, look, I'm sure that there are women out there who don't enjoy it.
One of my friends literally for years did not enjoy it at all. Like, was just so uncomfortable. And I think it was, like, partially, like, psychological.
Of course.
But she just, like, really couldn't get into it until she had fun with ladies. And then she was like, okay.
I look, man, and if that's your like, it's not, whatever you two do in, like, your private sex life, that's fine. Like, if that's, she's not into it, you're not into giving it, whatever, it's
but the way he's
cool.
saying it is so
misogynistic and
horrible.
Shitty.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, but if she were to decide not to do it to me, that's unacceptable.
It's like, the double standard that makes it so shitty.
Yeah.
And the way he says it, where he's just like, well, I'm the king. I'm the king in my house. And it's like, well, she's the queen and she's the one having the fucking kids.
Yeah.
Like, so maybe
make
don't
her
be a
feel
dick.
Good?
Yeah.
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 Well, my favorite man,
Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
We've, like, jinxed each other, like, a couple times in this episode.
We should make a drinking game out of
it. We should. But Dwayne tweeted, I just called him Dwayne.
Dwayne, our friend, our good friend, Dwayne.
Dwayne-y. He says, as a man, I take great pride in mastering all performances. This is probably a little TMI. I will now quietly excuse myself from this fun thread.
I know. I love it.
Fucking men. And I like also that it's like, ahem, clears throat, as a man.
He's like, I really picture it as him just like raising his hand and being like, excuse me, I'm just going to chime in here real quick and then I'll see myself out. Thanks.
Just like, really quick, I just want to say that I try to be the best at everything I do in every performance. That's all I wanted to
you
say.
You take that to mean what you want.
I'm just saying. bye. I love him. I love him so much. My friend worked background on like one of his movies or shows or something and just said he was like the coolest.
No, I've
ever.
Heard that he's so nice.
And like chatted with him and he was just like
yeah,
such a
he's
good
so
guy.
Nice. Like I've heard that he's like super, super cool. I would love to meet him, actually.
I want
to
be his friend.
Yeah, same. Samesies. But yeah, DJ Khaled, I'm like, homie, why? Like, you're already annoying me because you can't stop shouting your own goddamn name in every fucking song. So
we
I'm already annoyed with you. You know, like, I'm just trying to listen to Rihanna.
Well, what about Jason Derulo?
Well, but you see, but he gets it over with very quickly. Like,
that's true.
I was listening to whatever that Rihanna song was, Wild Thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a part where he's like, DJ Khaled, 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 Khaled. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Okay, we get it. You fucking produce this song. We get it. Like,
give me Rihanna now.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm here for Rihanna. Like, I am not here for you.
We are not here for you. We are especially not here for you now.
Yeah.
Please, yo ladies.
I love it that the internet just rallied around his wife. Like, they were like, oh, poor. Like, because you also watch him, like, he's always tweeting videos and stuff, or Snapchatting, like, yeah, him, like, just in her face when she's trying to work out. And she's, like, lost it on him a couple of times. And I'm, yeah, like, God, your patience, I don't know what he's doing that's making it worthwhile for
money?
You. I mean, I guess.
I mean, get yours, girl. Whatever you gotta do.
But get it then and bounce.
Yeah, right, exactly. She's like, and divorce. Yeah, so there's a piece of shit. What's your next thing like?
I think we have the same next thing.
I have another thing.
Oh, then you go.
It's just something I'm excited about and I hope happens. I'm a pretty big fan of the shows that Ryan Murphy has come out with, especially mm-hmm. recently with, I like American Horror Stories. I really enjoyed Scream Queens the first season, not so much the second. American Crime Story, he came out with Feud, all of these things. I guess he's with Netflix now,
mm-hmm.
and he's working on a show called Pose.
My friend is doing the editing for that.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
And I guess he's reconsidering this now, but he was thinking about having American Crime Story be based around Monica Lewinsky, which I really hope
that'd
he
be
still
cool.
does.
Who would play her, do you think?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
Me too.
I'm not good at, like, thinking of things off
that
the top
girl
of my head.
From Drop Dead Diva. Like, a few years ago.
Oh.
She kind of looks like her.
Yeah, I can see that. And he's spoken out about wanting to create more LGBTQ content for Netflix. He's also thinking about maybe possibly creating a series about the hashtag MeToo movement.
Yeah, I saw that too. I'm really excited about Pose. Do you know anything about it?
No, I don't.
So there's a documentary which everyone should watch, and you should also watch because it's like one of, it's if you look at lists of, like, the best documentaries of the last 20 years, it's almost always on there. It's called Paris is Burning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the voguing scene, the ball scene in New York City in,
yeah,
like, the 80s, where you would take, like, it was, like, a lot of, like, trans people or, like, you know, gay boys who were able to kind of, like, find, they would join houses, essentially, where they'd,
yeah,
be, like, a mother of the house, and they would go to these, like, balls together, and they would form their own families.
I like that.
And it's really, really cool to see, because you get to watch them, like, walk the runway and do all, like, the voguing, and
that's so cool.
It's super, super cool. So that's what
I
the show's about.
Well, the show that he would be thinking about doing about the Me Too movement would be called Consent, which would be potentially a new kind of American Crime Story type thing, but it would follow a Black Mirror model.
Interesting.
So it would be like a different perspective every episode. Every episode would explore a different story. The first one would be an account of the Weinstein Company. There would be an episode about Kevin Spacey, one about an ambiguous he said, she said encounter. Each episode.
Aziz Ansari.
Yeah, right. And each episode could have a different creator. And that was something that when I read that, I was like, that's such a good idea of, like, kind of showing these different experiences and, like, really honing in on each of them, like, per episode. Because I feel like when you see something, like, it really becomes real,
mm-hmm.
and people tend to understand it even better. So I think if that happens, I think that would be so
That'd
great.
Be super
I hope
cool.
he, like, sticks with it, even if it's, like, years down the line. I think it would still be important.
Well, and his shows always do really well. Like, for me, with Ryan Murphy shows, to me, they always, like, start off really strong,
and then
shit gets weird. Like, I was never big on Scream Queens because it was too campy for me, but, like, I loved...
The first season was so good.
I tried. I watched, like, half of the first season, and I was just like, this is too campy for me. It's too, like, cheeseball off the wall.
Yeah.
But I love American Horror Story, but it always starts the same way, where it's like, it's so good, and then, like, mid-season, I'm like, what's happening? Like,
yeah.
Shit's falling apart. But
Glee was great. I was a fan of Glee for a really long time.
I liked Glee for a long time. But I think Ryan Murphy still, he has enough, like, clout in Hollywood and, like, enough power that he could make this happen.
Yeah,
he can make it happen sooner rather than later, I think, if he wanted to.
I agree. I think that that's, I hope that that's something that he thinks about going through with.
And given my complaints about Ryan Murphy, I think having this format of having kind of individual stories each episode and a different director each time could make it better. Like, because where his shows go off the rails for me is the storyline starts to get so convoluted that they go in a bunch of different places.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's individual stories every episode, I bet it'll be really, really good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
So that's awesome.
So let's talk about the thing that has blown our minds this week.
Yeah, I don't have notes because I was just going to speak from the heart.
Let's speak from the heart. I have an article from BuzzFeed that I want to read off of.
We are going to talk about Donald Glover, Childish Gambino.
Man.
Who is, I was just thinking today, I was fantasizing today about what if Childish Gambino and Janelle Monáe went on tour together. Would my brain explode? It might explode.
And my vagina.
Yeah, at once. Just all of it. It's a mess. It's a bloody mess. But so he put out a new album. He's going to be touring. I really want to see him when he comes to LA.
Yes.
But he put out a new album. I saw him on SNL, which was, he was so good.
So good.
SNL can be hit or miss. He was super good. He was a good host, and he performed two of his new singles, one of them being This Is America, and that video is destroying the internet.
Yes, because it's so good, and I'm going to get into it a little bit, like the little specific things that we may have missed when we watched it. It was the first thing that my boss said when she walked through the door today. She's like, oh my God, I'm sorry. Like, I was just sitting in my car watching this. And I watched it in the car on my way over here because I knew Keegan would want to talk about it. And, like, I was floored.
It's completely Anthony floored. Put it on my, because Anthony and I have had this kind of like debate about whether or not we like Donald Glover, and I'm like, I like him, and he's like, I think he's kind of weird, and I'm like, I like that he's weird. It's like one of those things.
Best.
And then Anthony shared that video to my wall, my Facebook wall today, and was just like, okay, I love this guy.
Yes, he's amazing. And the things, if you haven't watched it, pause this. Go watch it.
Come back.
Come back. Because holy shit, it's so good. And you don't know how good it is when you first see it. And then you start reading into it more. And
well, and for me, he's so talented. Like, I think that's what drives it home. Is like, when I was watching it for the first time and I was thinking, like, we don't fucking need Kanye. Like, everyone's always just like, oh, Kanye's a genius, though. And, like, we're going to lose his genius. And I'm like, you know what? Donald Glover is a genius.
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of take you step by step here, and
do
we're
going
to talk about it. So I'm getting this article off of BuzzFeed, where I get way too much of my news sources.
Look, it's fine.
So the beginning, his dance and the pose that he does when he kills the man sitting in the chair with the guitar.
Spoiler alert.
He has taken the pose from the original Jim Crow. So we'll post this photo, but look at these photos side by side.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Jim Crow laws were state and local laws that enforced racial segregation in the southern United States, enacted by white Democratic-dominated state legislatures in the late 19th century after the Reconstruction period. So it was kind of like a really racist thing. A long time ago.
So, if you don't know what Jim Crow laws are, Jim Crow laws basically separated whites and blacks in the South.
Thank you. That sounded so much more eloquent than my Wikipedia.
No. Like, yeah. So if you ever see pictures of, you know, the South in the 50s, 60s, 40s, where you see a coloreds only water fountain and a whites only water fountain, or a coloreds only entrance and a white only entrance. Those are all Jim Crow laws. So it was basically a legal way to continue. It was legal discrimination in the South.
And one of the kind of posters and propaganda is there's like a pose that he's doing of like a little dance, which is exactly the pose that he's doing and kind of like the dances that he's doing in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The details in this were super nuanced. Like, the pants that he wore, they've been traced back to the basics of Confederate Army uniforms.
So, yeah, those, like, khakis or gray colored
pants. They look like part of the Confederate uniform. It's super cool. Then there was that white horse in the background.
Mm-hmm.
It's Death riding the pale white horse while he is followed by Hell, represented by the police, going totally unnoticed because of dancing and pop culture in the foreground, is the single greatest cinematic message I've seen in a music video to date, is what someone tweeted.
Yeah, I think also something that was so amazing that they did in this music video was the juxtaposition between violence and like something that seemed actually really jovial and happy.
Yeah.
Like when
he was
went,
like doing the whip and the nene
yeah,
to and, distract you from like what was happening.
Yeah, it looks like, because that's what makes the beginning so jarring, is because you're like, all right, we're here for fun. Like, this is gonna be fun.
Yeah.
And then like shit goes down and you're like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like, I didn't see that coming.
And then so this is the Bible verse about the pale white horse. It says, "And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him." So the
it's
fact
Revelation.
That, yeah, it's just, it's, yeah, Revelation 6:8. Such a cool image, and again, it's something that you're distracted by this, these dances, and the kids, and all this stuff, and then in the background you see something very, very, very nuanced mm-hmm. and very dark. The video even speaks to America's gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, that was in the forefront.
Yeah, America moves on from mass shootings to mass shootings as quickly as Childish Gambino did. Because he shoots someone, and then he's, like, dancing away, and he's like, yeah, whatever.
And
like,
he seems happy.
We moved on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all good. We don't need to focus
and
on this.
The church one was, like, intense.
Well, that's
yeah.
the next one on the list here. It says, in fact, there's a graphic scene that touched precisely on the Charleston massacre from 2015. Someone tweeted, "This scene reenacts Charleston shooting. Black people praising Lord killed for no reason. Look at the background. You see people running toward the area and rioting for change and cops running after them just because it's their job." And then he's, again, like, he shoots them and it's quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and then he's like, okay.
Right. Well, they're all partying together. They're having a great time.
Yeah.
And then it's done. And then he moves right on.
And then, it's like it doesn't matter. And then he goes kind of right back into the kind of the warehouse that he was in. This one, it says, blink and you might miss this one. No one caught the fact that at 2 minutes and 13 seconds, a man jumps to his death. It shows that we don't care about suicide in America, yet all in when it's a dance trend. There we go. This is America. So he's doing, like, kind of the dance trend in the
mm-hmm.
foreground, and then there's someone who, like, jumps to their death in the
mm-hmm.
background. So we don't want to focus on that. We want to focus on the trends
mm-hmm.
and what's cool and whatever. And then number 8, it said, you could potentially gloss over all of the various dances and their meanings that are intertwined in the video, too. Forbes said, the dancing. Gambino references at least 10 ultra-popular dances, including old ones and new ones. One of these dances was the, I'm going to say this wrong, I apologize, Guara Guara, which originated in South Africa. What's remarkable is that the dancers nailed each performance, and you could interpret that in one or two or three ways. One, they are clueless in dancing. Two, they have a clue and dance to keep from crying. Three, they are jamming for the camera or for social media video, and their dancing is a distraction, a salve, or an invisibility cloak. And you see people recording them, too, like
mm-hmm.
on phones.
And I think it was really interesting. It was an interesting choice, too, to use children.
Yeah. And it says, keep in mind the dancers were not shot, nor were they chased by the police. Given Glover's droll sense of realistic humor in Atlanta, it would not surprise me if 3 interpretations are correct, but often that is life in America. Another thing that's interesting is that none of the cars are new, which is kind of a trope in a lot of rap videos. It's
mm-hmm.
like the new whip and the greatest thing, whatever. And they're all kind of like old cars showing like, no, this is like what real America is. All of the makers and models are mid to early 90s, if not 80s, cars. This speaks to the whole idea that a fair number of Americans aren't driving new whips. Many people are pushing boxy cars that still have tape decks. Me. I don't have a CD player
in my car.
Oh my
God, really?
Yes, I don't have a CD player.
Actually, Anthony has a tape deck in his car, too.
Yeah, that's how I plug in my phone. I put a tape in that has a cord that can
I know, that's because I told Anthony, that's what I used to do. And
yeah.
he's just like, I want to listen to podcasts in my car. And I'm like, you better go get one of those tapes.
Yeah, that's what I do. It says, luxury vehicles are often seen in rap videos and are noticeably absent from this one. I guess he mentions a lot of other rappers in this. I'll send you this list because it's something that I know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
The end of the video, Childish demonstrated what being a black man in America is like. Don't catch this is the tweet. This is not me. Don't catch you slipping, y'all. The end of the video, though, even with all the beauty he may bring to the world through his art, he is still just a black man running for his life.
Yeah.
# this is America. And the end of the video is intense.
Yeah, it's like him running.
Because he's like happy-go-lucky through the whole thing, and then at the end, like, oh, I love that it's dark and you can just kind of see his eyes.
And his eyes are wide open.
Like, oh, God. It's so intense and frightening and scary, but so fucking real.
Yeah, no, he is truly a genius. Like, this guy is, I mean, I would say he's going places, but he's there.
He's already been there. Like,
but he, I think he's going to be somebody who, like, we look back on in, he's going to have a very long career.
Yeah.
And he's going to be somebody who we think is, like, a great, you know?
It's crazy because, like, he's been around. And, like, people are still learning about him, and that's what's crazy to me. It's like, no, this dude has, like, been there. Like, Chris kind of introduced me to him, and I'm a fucking obsessed with him.
Yeah, he's been around. I watched his stand-up back in the day. He's done stand-up. He's an actor. He's been Childish Gambino forever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, that music has been coming out for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So he's been here, and he's been doing the work, and now he's just, like, totally kind of, I think he's totally decided, I'm just gonna do what I want. And I'm going to be so good at it that you guys can't ignore me, essentially.
Yeah.
Because I think he had to fight to get Atlanta made, and had to fight to kind of, like, make the music that he wanted to make without everybody else kind of, like, butting their heads in.
Yeah.
So,
no, he is, like...
Props to you, Donald Glover.
Huge trailblazer. I just love the man. I would love to be his friend as well.
Yeah, I told him, if you're listening, Donald, give me a call. No, I told Anthony when he shared that video on my wall, I was just like... Glover is the only Donald I recognize.
Yes! I love it. I didn't even think about that.
The only one. I'm just like, the you share a name with the worst person in the world.
Yeah, but you're so great.
But you're amazing.
So, yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to add about the video or anything?
No, I don't have anything else for the video.
We do have a few things that we need to read. We do. Like to read Annie's message.
Yes. Okay, so a couple of weeks ago when we talked about 420 and the racial disparity between people of color and white people when it comes to drug use, our good friend Annie, who is a friend of the show who we love very much, she wrote us a long message because she works at a cannabis dispensary and kind of gave us a little bit of insight. We meant to read it last week, but that week went really long in our episode, so I have it for you this week.
Go for it, Keeks.
Okay. I just want to let you know that your commentary on the racial discrimination when it comes to marijuana was spot on. That and the totally old school image of a typical stoner. So annoying. I love cannabis apparel, but everything is so tacky. And no, I don't love Bob Marley. Also, fun fact, not sure if you were aware, but to further prove the racial bias, marijuana was a term coined by Harry Anslinger, the first director of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics. Up until 1910, the term cannabis was used, a shortened form of its scientific name, and was only used by extraction in medicines such as tinctures. Right around 1910, America began to see an influx of legal Mexican immigrants seeking refuge from war and traditionally used methods of inhalation with cannabis, rather than ingesting. By 1913, California passed the first bill criminalizing loco weed, or rather, smoking the flower. In 1930, Anslinger testified to Congress, "Marijuana is the most violent-causing drug in the history of mankind." Fucking goddamn, that's dramatic.
Goddamn.
Most marijuana smokers are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers. Their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana usage. Reefer makes darkies think they're as good as white men.
Oh, God.
The primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races. Yikes!
Nope.
And hence, reefer madness and the term marijuana fell into the mainstream. Marijuana was a term coined out of hatred and fear to create some sort of foreign, dangerous narrative. It is purely propaganda used to further stigmatize the other. So sad that we grew up with this term, not realizing how horribly racist and awful its roots are. But anyway, thanks for always letting me vent. Love y'all as always.
Love it.
I love that, and I'm so happy that she wrote in and said that, and that she has that kind of, like, expertise, but it illustrates so perfectly how this issue kind of, like, manifested strictly out of racism, and then its roots kind of clung on in our culture forever to the point where, like, white people could really, like, smoke all the time, and, like, these movies like Dazed and Confused can be made where it's kind of like, yeah, they're stoners and it's funny, and in the meantime, people of color are being disproportionately affected by these marijuana laws. So thank you so much, Annie, for writing in.
That was
so interesting, and I loved reading your mail, and keep sending us stuff. We love that.
We love it so much. I'm gonna read, there's four stories from Madison. We read one of them last time. I'm going to read another one this week, and then we're also going to read another Sister Solidarity story. So
All right.
Two of them for you this week. First one is from Madison, And it says, the third story, which for me, we're reading the second one, I have is from when I was in Scotland with my friend and her boyfriend. They took me to a gay club since I'm bi, which was really cool in itself, but they didn't want to dance on the dance floor, and I did. Well, this guy asked me to dance, and I said yes, and we danced for a while, which was really fun, until he started to take me to this back corner where no one was. I definitely did not want this, but he had a hold of my hand and was dragging me toward a dark corner. So I looked over at my friend with worry, and she saw me, so she sent her boyfriend over to save me. He grabbed my other hand and told me that him and my friend wanted to leave, so now he was able to help get me away from that other guy. That was some true sister solidarity from my friend and her boyfriend. And that one, like, rings so true to me because it's like you need those friends at a club where if you can send them a glance to be like, you need to do something about this now.
Has there ever been a girl who hasn't been in that situation? I don't think so. I think every girl who's ever gone out, not even just to a club, but like to a bar, any girl who's ever gone out has experienced that. And it is terrifying.
Yeah, it's so terrifying. So I like that she shared that story. I feel like it's one that all of us can like really connect with.
Agreed, yeah.
Sorry about that. Bumped the microphone. Another one, I got two sister solidarity stories from Alicia, who is a friend of ours on Instagram. And I'm going to read, again, I'm just going to read the first one. We'll read the second one next time. She says, after a particularly upsetting breakup, four of my homegirls all showed up to my house, each bearing a bag of sour gummy worms, as those are my favorite. None of them communicated with each other at all. That's what girl love is to me. Being there for each other whenever and whenever. Needless to say, I've never felt more loved.
That is so simple, but, like, the most beautiful thing. When none of them coordinated to be... Because it's special, too, whenever, like, your girlfriends get together and they're just like, hey, Keegan's having a really hard time. Let's organize this thing and go see her. But it's also even more special when each one individually made the decision to come see you.
Yeah, I've definitely felt that, too, between, like... With, like, you and Ariel, when I was going through a hard time, like, you guys didn't really know each other that well, but, like, we would come together kind of, like, it felt like for the sake of me, which always made me feel really good. So I'd totally been there, and it really is so great when you have, like, different groups come together to support you in some way. Especially
it makes
when it's
all the difference.
Like a crappy breakup.
Yeah.
And they all bring you sour gummy worms.
Yeah,
it's
it makes
so cute.
All the difference in the world whenever. Like, I remember whenever my grandma died, and I went home early from work because I got the call when I was at work and I went home early.
God.
And I was just crying. I was living alone at the time. And so I was just like crying alone in my apartment and got a knock on my door and my girlfriends from work had bought me flowers and sent them to me. And it meant so much to me that they like thought to do that, like send me a bouquet of flowers, you know, it was just so sweet. So like having those friendships or having those girlfriends in your life that love and support you and are there for you whenever you're at your lowest is the best.
And just, like, understand, even if they're not, like, super close friends, because I've totally had that, where, like, someone that I don't even know that well will kind of, like, show me that small act of kindness when
it's
I need it. And
might be just
best.
What you needed right
it's
at that
perfect.
Time.
Yeah. So I really love these stories, you guys. Please keep sending them in. I love it so much. Just hearing from you guys means the world to us. And we're also going to encourage you to please message us your motherhood stories.
Yeah, you got a couple more days to send us your motherhood stories, so please send those in to us.
Please, because the next episode we record is going to be our motherhood episode. And if you are a mother, have a mother, want to be a mother, know a mother, really anything.
So any of you.
Any of you.
None of you have an excuse.
No.
What are you
there's
doing?
There's no excuses whatsoever. So get on your phone or on your computer and send us a message, please.
I want to stress that negative or positive. Because I feel like when we say that, people, like, obviously, it would be lovely to have, like, some heartwarming mother, like, stories of what it's like. But also,
that's not realistic.
Also, being a mom can be scary. And, like, you should send us those, too, because, like, that's real life. Like, if you had fears when you found out you were pregnant, if things are maybe not picture perfect all the time, because I know that that's how it is whenever you're a mom.
Or if you have a horrible relationship with your mom and you don't celebrate Mother's Day. Like, that I can completely relate to in another way. And I think that if you want to share a story like that as well, we are here. We want to know all of them. This isn't about just
wonderful mother stories.
Squeaky clean. Yeah, that's not what we're about. That's not what this podcast is about. And we want to be able to show all the different sides of motherhood.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we hope we didn't fuck up the news too badly. I did my best, okay? So feel free to write Caitlin, and tell me
always
all the ways in which I'm wrong.
I'm always super impressed with you, Caitlin.
Thank you.
And with that, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye. I totally burped when I said that.